You're listening to a podcast by BI Norwegian Business School.
Welcome back to Stay Ahead, a BI Norwegian Business School podcast. This episode is part of the Strategy as Practice series, where practice meets theory and theory meets practice. Today's topic is Global Strategy in Diversified Corporations. Today, I have the pleasure of having with me Thomas Wilhelmsen. He's the CEO of Wilhelmsen Group and been that since 2010 and is the fifth generation of owners. Welcome.
Thank you very much, Thomas. Great to be here.
I'm also joined by Professor Randi Lundan. She has been at BI since 1999 and appointed full professor in 2008. Between 2012 and 2020, she was head of the Department of Strategy and Entrepreneurship. She now holds the Tom Wilhelmsen Chair focusing on ocean research. The research areas include inter-organizational relations and international management, but much of her research now is focusing on the transition of ocean business into the green economy. Welcome.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
My name is Thomas Borgen, and I'm an industrial PhD candidate at the Department of Strategy and Entrepreneurship here at BI, and I will be your host today. Thomas, you are the fifth generation dedicated to the Wilhelmsen Group. You've been working through and up the ranks. I actually believe you started as a postman. Did you really expect to end up as the CEO?
I don't think the thought even struck my mind at that time. But I have been working in different parts of the organization ever since I was little, and maybe not so much in the postal department, but in the truck repair shop and different places down at the terminal at Philipstad, which we had at that time, which I think is it was a great learning.
That's cool. But working through the ranks, was it or is it an advantage or challenge that probably all of your superiors or even colleagues knew your family connection and that you actually maybe one day ended up as a CEO?
Yeah, I think when I was young, as in really young of age, I don't think it really mattered at all. Then it was typically as any summer intern or anything else. And, you know, when I started doing this, I was probably 10 years old. Yeah. So it was at an early age. But of course, when you get older, it's a bit of a two-edged sword working within a business in which, say, a family has very strong connections. But I would say two-edged sword because there are pros and there are significant cons. But the positive sides of it, at least from my point of view, is that you get the opportunity to see a lot of different facets of a business, which you typically would not be able to do. So, as I said, I've been working in the truck repair shop. I've been driving forklifts, stuffing, stripping containers. I've been dismantling engine parts. I've been working on shipyards. I've been working on board ships. I've been, you know, so I've done a lot of these smaller things. So I'm not a specialist in any of them, but I know many parts of, call it the type of business that we are in and that we've been involved in over time.
Very impressive. Then we know who we're going to call when we have some problems on the engine on the boat then.
but of course, the challenging part, just picking up on that, which I think is important, is when you get older and you start a career, then you get into the challenges of the people being there, knowing who you are, probably treating you a little bit different than what they would with others. So I've always said that one of the things that I cherish the most internally in our organization is proper feedback, because that's probably one of the things that you may lack in that type of a situation.
Very, very interesting. But Randi, kind of reminds me that you've been heading up the Department for Strategy and Entrepreneurship for many years, and you recently just stepped down. as this position is a tenure position. How is it to lead when you know that within a defined time span, you will actually be back among the faculty?
Yeah, I think it's a very strange kind of situation going from being a colleague to being a manager and then going back to being a colleague again. So it has some challenges, but it was a steep learning curve for sure. But it was very interesting. And I also think it was nice to kind of do strategy instead of just teaching it or reading about it. Exactly. And I found that that was a little bit different, but a very good experience. And I think there are a couple of things that I learned that I think is important to be a leader. And one of them is, you know, I was a middle manager. So I was working on strategy within BI. So I could really feel how important it is for the organization to have a clear strategy. So as a middle manager, it's, you know, I was lucky to be a middle manager in a time when BI kind of had a clear strategy towards being more academic, which was helped me in being the head of department. And it's also, I learned how to work with people because, you know, essentially people is the one who kind of, you know, it's people who do strategy. So you have to kind of, especially when you make change, you have to make sure that people are with you and also to lead even those that are against you, you know, and there will be somebody who is against. And then I think that another thing that I was thinking a lot about was how to develop a resource that you cannot buy in the marketplace. So, for example, how to change the department. So what I do today, what does it allow me to do tomorrow? And then maybe in the, you know, next day. So I have to do something today that has kind of past dependencies for the future. And then thinking about those things, I think was really useful. And then it's kind of hard to step back and be a professor again. But that's also fun. To do that.
But here we have a professor with real life experience. That's very good. So welcome, Randi.
Thank you.
Well, let's jump into today's topic. Wilhelm Wilhelmsen is one of the world's leading maritime groups. I think you're present in more than 2,200 locations worldwide and with more than 15,000 employees that provide services such as sea transportation, integrated logistics solutions from factory to dealer and through operating companies. You have a major industrial holdings, Wallenius Wilhelmsen, just to mention one, and you are now venturing into renewables. But how does such a diversified strategy come together? So I have to ask you, Thomas, maritime services, shipping, logistics, renewables, also infrastructure. Is there a common denominator in this?
I think we have several common denominators. And I think I'll start with our vision, which we are very proud of, which is shaping the maritime industry, which really sets the frame of where we want to be, both from an industry perspective, but also that we would like to be a leading player or through the shaper word. So we want to play a role where we can actually mold change to the better the industries that we are in, but within the maritime field. So the maritime field is really the main common denominator, but also the way we would like to be as a player or a shaper, as we call it, within the businesses that we are involved in.
So building those lines of business, is that based on individual lines and then the portfolio comes as a portfolio, or do you start with a portfolio thinking saying now we need to move into X, Y, or Z?
I think we're probably looking at it both ways. But of course we have a platform, a starting platform with the competence and the businesses that we are involved in. And we are very much focused on people as our core, say, competence and basis for what we're doing. So a lot of companies within the maritime field are typically asset heavy and people lightish in comparison. While we are probably the very different. So from a strategic perspective, we decided many, many years ago that people is probably the most important asset that we can have. And as you said, we're operating in a lot of different parts of the world, in close to 60 countries and in thousands of ports. And we believe that's a unique starting platform for many of the business lines that we are in, but also as a fantastic catalyst for moving into new business ventures. So when you see several of the new businesses that we are involved in today, I'm not sure if we would have become a shareholder of those businesses if it hadn't been for the international platform. Because we are scarce on capital while the world is, say, overflowing of capital. So we are bringing something else to the table. Of course, we have to be there from a financial point of view to, in a way, pay what it takes. But the icing on the cake is what we can add to the equation in terms of the competence and the network that we have within the maritime field, and use that to excel the businesses that we are involved in.
Being so global, so diversified, are you able to create one culture or is it multiple cultures?
It's a very good question. And I think we definitely do not have one culture. But I think we have there's a lot of common denominators in the various cultures that we have, and we are trying our best to use certain techniques and methods, which I'm sure, Randy, you are a specialist in. But in terms of, for example, our corporate values, we are very focused on being a value-driven organization. We have a set of five corporate values from a Wilhelmsen perspective. But we're also realistic in the sense that if we're becoming a shareholder or even a majority shareholder, but not a sole shareholder, that we have to allow businesses to have, in a way, their own culture and their own set of values, as long as we feel that they are aligned with our overall, say, rule set as a company.
Exactly. So, Randy, following up on Thomas' comments there, what does research tell us now about those challenges and maybe strength of having such a global perspective as they have?
So obviously there are many kind of advantages of being global, tapping into so many industries and kind of having so much information that you get from different industries and different countries. And I think the benefits of being global is sharing. So having economies of scale, having economies of scope, having that learning. But then the opposite is also, as you say, the autonomy. So if you try to standardize, for example, or you know, do the same things in all countries, maybe you lose something. Maybe you lose initiative. Maybe you lose the autonomy of the different business units, mm-hmm. which I assume is one of the challenges in your type of industry, because you do so many different things and you have so many nationalities represented in your organization. So what the theory says is that this is the big challenge of international management, that you want to have the benefits of standardization and kind of doing the same thing, because it gives predictability, right, to your shareholders, to suppliers, to customers, that they kind of know who Wilhelmsen is and what they deliver. But at the same time, you want to benefit from the diversity of different cultures and the local initiatives. So this is exactly kind of the main challenge, you could say, of international business.
Yeah, no doubt. And we are challenged in that respect every single day. Mm. And of course, we realize, and I think you have to be realistic, that running a large organization, there will be challenges in certain pockets all the time. And of course, we have that as well. But at the same time, by having a common denominator or a common set of values or whatever expression you want to use on it, but the glue that we have and the direction that we want to move in as a group, to have that, implemented in the global organization gives everyone a sense of not just belonging, but also direction and a comfort from internally, but also externally from customers and other stakeholders, that dealing with this company, this is what we can expect.
How do you develop that global or shared value set? Is it through who you recruit, or is it through training? And do you sometimes maybe have to let people go because they don't develop that value? Or
And I think there's probably no silver bullet in terms of how you do this, but I think you have to work on absolutely every single facet of it. Mm-hmm. It's recruiting, it's the way you talk, it's the way you walk, it's the... So you have to, it's the tools that you use in terms of internal training, it's your communication, it's the type of business you buy, it's the type of business you divest. So it's absolutely everything you do has to include this in some way or form, or at least that you can relate back to it so that you understand the decisions or the directions or the communication that you get. You have, say, a hook to hang it on. So we are using every single opportunity to work on this, and it's not something you can do a single month and then it's done. Mm. You just have to do it 24/7, 365 days a year.
But just following up on that point, I note that your ownership models are quite diverse. Everything from you owning 100% through minority holdings and in between, with what I presume we can call strategic holdings or alliances. When you have less than 100%, how do you then influence those values you're kind of speaking about there?
I think what we try to do is to take it from the representatives that we have, to call it that, to who sits on the board or who has the interactions. They come with a tool set or a bag of... of experience in terms of how we would like to have it. And you have some people call it like a ownership statement. We haven't got a firm ownership statement. We're working on that. But that's in a way what you bring in, the Williamson ownership statement, and you're trying to, facilitate and use that as best as you can with the interactions that we have with those companies and the people that we meet.
Very interesting. You study quite a lot of alliances, mm-hmm. strategic alliances and various joint ventures. What's your perspective on some of the topics Thomas brings up here?
Well, I think it's very interesting because the Williamson company has a lot of diverse ownership. So some things are wholly owned, some things are in different forms of alliances. So I think it's interesting to think about, usually you use wholly owned, for something that's core of your business, and then you can use alliances to learn. And I think one example from Williamson is that you try to, you're in a lot of alliances in you could say, the new industry. Mm. For example, in digitalization, in green energy, and maybe also in different types of consulting services. So because alliances is less committing than ownership, so you can, and with that, I mean, you can withdraw if it doesn't work, or you can also use them to expand if you want to go deeper into an industry. So I think what is, and that's one way of using alliances to kind of expand into new areas, maybe getting new knowledge. Whereas if you want to, let's say, reap synergies, maybe you want to own, because then you have to have control of the business. You can kind of reorganize it to get it more efficient, right? So yeah, I think that kind of balance between what you own and then what you use in terms of collaboration with others, and you collaborate with a lot of different companies, right?
Yeah, we do, and I think it's the bit of a, there's always a trade-off in terms of for different reasons. A reason could be capital that you can't afford to. Another reason can be that you don't have the competence, so you're aligning yourself with someone who have it. And the maritime industry that we are involved in, of course, is a global industry, and we are a small company based in Norway. And of course, we have limited resources. So in order to get that reach from an historical perspective, we've ended up in partnerships. I would actually believe that we are one of the most advanced companies in terms of understanding partnerships, for at least from a Norwegian perspective in international terms, because we've been in a way forced to do so in many, many years or over generations. But I still think you can reap a lot of synergies and you can excel and you can create a lot of enthusiasm and drive by having, say, different form of ownership models within a company. So, and you mentioned digitization. We started looking at that for now quite a few years ago. But of course, we also realized on you initially that we don't necessarily have the internal competence needed, nor in certain cases do we have the ownership model needed, because different businesses have different, ownership models or expectations from the various players. So if you're a brokering business, you have a very different, call it remuneration and ownership model than if you're an industrial business. And playing along the whole, call it value chain of the maritime industry, we also need to be a little bit agnostic in terms of our ownership model for the various, entry points that that we have as a company. Mm.
But I think one interesting thing about ownership and alliances is actually incentives. Because you could say when you own something, for example, if you make an acquisition, usually the target is you know, you feel like you've lost your identity and you're kind of being swallowed by this bigger owner. Whereas in alliances, the incentives are a little bit different because you kind of are partners, right? Yep. So both of you can share and both of you can contribute because the value of what you create is also divided by, you know, for both partners. Mm. So I think the alliance kind of thinking can also bring some advantages to the table in terms of those type of, in academia, we call them high-powered incentives, because you kind of have, you know, you work for yourself rather than being owned by somebody, right?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. And I think, so what I think with the way that you work with some companies that maybe if you made an acquisition, you would lose those incentives, right? But whereas when you work with them, maybe you can, in another way, tap into some of their resources and knowledge and learn and in a different way.
You're a partner in a different way.
Exactly. Mm.
As you said, many years of working with partnership and you probably... as you alluded to, one of those companies worldwide, at least in the Nordics, who's the most experienced. But is there any generic learnings you can give away, which others can bring with them, which you can share?
I'm not sure if I have some, say, very good examples of that, but probably go back to where we started in terms of... A key learning from my side is not necessarily what we've gotten out of it, but it is that we have a starting point as a company, Wilhelmsen, in the way that we, say, present ourselves, how we work, the vision that we have, the values that we have as a company. So our internal focus, call it the personality of the company and the culture of the company to be mindful of what that is, and also to make sure that the partners that you get, whether it's through, say, shareholding or alliances or whatever, that they also understand what type of company are we and what type of representation will we prove to show.
Another thing which I think we're discussing quite a lot, both in business and in academia, is sharing. Let's call it best practice, if there is something called best practice. And again, with your so diversified model, both business lines-wise, also geographical-wise, do you have a central hub to try to catch this up? Or how did you accumulate and disperse those practices?
Now, we probably have several hubs, and I hope that everyone gains, knowledge along the way and brings that with them. But of course, we do have, say, larger regional central clusters of people where it's easier in a way to get this more on a system basis than in smaller business, because you have to... bring with you in this, that when we talk about the global footprint that we have, a lot of those are small offices, 4, 5, 6, 7 people in different ports around the world. So there's probably a limit to how much time the individuals or our employees in those offices spend on this type of thinking. So we need to bring that into areas where we can actually digest it and bring it out again into the organization so that it reaches every single individual. And I believe the last part there to every single individual is extremely important. So when we talk about our communication and our strategy, we're also very focused on how can we actually reach, say, the person who sits driving a forklift in Australia or doing something completely different in India or somewhere else. It's not necessarily management-based. It has to be absolutely everyone of, call it the 15,000 employees that we have.
I know, Randy, you study quite a lot this transfer of capabilities and knowledge sharing. What's research telling us there?
That it's very often difficult because you could say to transfer, you could say explicit knowledge. For example, how to learn to drive a forklift. I assume you can transfer quite easily. Mm. But for example, I've worked a little bit with yards or shipbuilders and suppliers to those. And some of the more, you could say, complex knowledge is a little bit difficult, particularly if you have some sort of routines that are tacit. So you can be very, very efficient in the Norwegian shipyard because we work together for so long. And I know if I do this, you know immediately what I do, and then you can follow up. Whereas those things are a little bit more difficult to transfer, and you have a lot of difficulties. For example, if you outsource or offshore to China, where you have to try to write those capabilities or routines out, and that's a little bit complex.
But that's where the culture and the value base comes in. And if you work with that constantly, at least from a larger perspective, I think you can get a good sense of feeling as to how an organization would react. But there's always examples of people or areas where you have a difference or where it doesn't happen or for whatever reason, as you would have everywhere else. Mm. But you have to think about this in the larger, say, from a larger macro perspective of the organization. And I'm a strong believer that if you do that, it will give everyone in the organization comfort in the way we are driving our business forward. But also it gives a sense of belonging and a drive to excel towards the goals that you set as a group.
Yeah. But sometimes also it's not only about transferring knowledge, you could say, from headquarters or Norway to China or wherever you are, but it's also about the reverse knowledge transfer, because sometimes a lot of knowledge is also created, you know, out in the organization. And maybe they do things that are smarter than what we do. So how do you try to capture the kind of exciting or new things that happen out there?
We, in general terms, we try to give equal opportunities to everyone. So if we have a open position, regardless of where it is in the world, you should have the opportunity to, say, pitch for that position, regardless of where you sit. Of course, it's difficult and what have you, but I think that's a important way of doing it. And also, you point to something which is extremely important. There's very seldom that head office or head country has all the right answers to the way of how to operate. So here you need to make that a symbiosis and respect and incentivize how people can actually come up with their ideas, working together with a larger organization, but also cross companies. And with that, we are trying to at least introduce arenas and tools where people get to meet. So now we're running a very cool learning development program, management development program, which is, I think we have 3,000 to 4,000 people who's going to go through this all together, and you're being sit together in different teams. It's all virtually based. It's probably never been tried before, at least not to my knowledge, and where we run different modules. So, and I'm part of that as well as everyone else, and I'm called a module one. I was together with 2-3 other people from different parts of the world, different parts of our organization, and you are given certain tasks. And one, you have, they call it the management learning or the learning from a more from a theoretical point of view. But the second and probably most beneficial part of those type of tools, in my mind, is the interaction that you create. Because it takes down barriers, because it's completely agnostic to where you are in the hierarchy, and also the different businesses or genders or nationalities or what have you. So you get the opportunity to have an arena to work with your colleagues from around the world on a specific topic, but you get that additional benefit of working together. And in module two, you get a different group. And in module three, you have another group. So that's just an example of the type of tools that we try to implement to get that global interaction.
Extremely exciting. And hopefully we can invite you back and then you can tell us the learnings from such an major, not experiment, but actually initiative, which sounds very exciting for a company of your size. But now I would like to change tack slightly. And I know this is something which is very close to your heart, Thomas, and the company. And that's the way you want to redesign the portfolio, or actually you are in the midst of it, of intensifying the focus on renewable energy and the decarbonization. Actually, transition to the new economy or the green transition. And I also see that you have created a new business segment called New Energy. Can you share with us some of your thinking around this?
Yeah, first I would probably start with adaptability. I don't think we would have been around as a company within this industry if we hadn't been adaptable over, say, the last 160 years. It's a very volatile industry. And if you're not call it quick or adaptable and willing to change, then it's extremely hard to survive over time. And of course, we are focused on the opportunities that are out there, and we're very focused on how we can utilize, again, what I call our international platform as a catalyst into new areas. And within what we define then as the broader maritime industry, there are now a lot of interesting pockets coming up of opportunities. Some are driven by regulation and some are driven by other means. And we've been over several years now working along the lines of looking at the opportunities that the energy transition is actually creating for companies like ours, but also in terms of digitization and technology, which are important, say, tools to use to advance a business, which is by some seen as extremely conservative and slow moving. I would also then say, yes, it is to a certain extent. But at the other time, or other side of the coin, is that it is quite an adaptable industry. But we have to keep in mind that in many cases, you're building an asset, which is then built to trade for 25 to 30 years. And of course, you're hanging on to it. And the other part, which is probably the most important, say, factor of the conservatism in terms of business practices, is that you're dealing with every single country in the world which has a coastline. And there's a lot of red tape, and there's a lot of different ways of, say, how advanced a country is. So we've been working along these opportunities for a long time. And last year, we sat down within the leadership team and discussed how is this going. And we thought that we had advanced quite a lot. but we didn't feel that we managed to get the right attention and recognition internally, but also externally. So the businesses that you see there today within the segment, we had them before, and we've been working on, call it our own communication, etc. But this was by, making this a new segment and visualizing this internally and externally has been very helpful in terms of advancing this to a very different level in terms of motivation and drive. So I believe we will see great changes in that area, and that there are a lot of opportunities coming where we just have to play a part.
Wow. We need to speak more about that. But Randi, I mean, in your research now, you're working a lot on, let's call it, the ocean business into green economy. Where are we now on the research side?
So I think there are many, many, many interesting business opportunities, as you say. And I think I'm really impressed by looking at your portfolio of companies, because I think they tap into a lot of the new energy sources. You have ocean minerals, you have kind of the new digitalization, as you say. So I think there is a lot of new initiatives, but there is a big transformation going on. I think shipping accounts for something like 1% of global emissions, so it's quite significant. And it's a very important topic and a lot of discussion how to deal with it. But I think there are some issues that are challenging, and I think you mentioned some of those. Because every country that has, you know, the oceans kind of connect so many of us. Mm. So you have what it's called kind of the tragedy of the commons, where, you know, if one country does something, it affects others, you know, benefits, but also, you know, overfishing or pollution or something like that. So it's an area where you kind of have to work together, and that's difficult, where you have the IMO and you know, so you have global bodies that try to do something with this. You have EU and regional bodies, you have national bodies, but it's something about agreeing on the rules and regulations and then enforcing these. So that, I think that's a challenging, but there's a lot of work going on in that area.
And that's where I think also we've come in terms of, we don't want to be the lowest common denominator.
Yeah.
Which typically happens when you have a global set of rules. Then coming back to our vision of shaping the maritime industry, we want to be the player who is actually part of setting the stage as to what type of global regulations will we see down the track. So autonomous vessels, there is no regulation in place, but we are working with the regulators to make sure that there's a good set of regulations down the track. And also when it comes to new energies and the energy transition, how can we, as a maritime player, be part of this journey, not just from a commercial perspective, but also in terms of the direction that we are taking, so that the world is really becoming a better place, or what we call enabling sustainable global trade.
Mm. And I think that's vital. So the companies themselves having to, you know, can push this development, and customers are pushing it too, because they want their transportation to be less CO2 kind of challenging, so they can kind of use that to improve their climate kind of footprint. So I think there are many pressures coming from companies and customers, and you know, but it's still kind of a space where things are going fast and where there are a lot of uncertainties.
But if I were to ask you do you believe the maritime industry is capable of adapting to, say, the new world order in terms of emissions and the various goals that are set for 2050?
Yes, I think so. I'm an optimist. And I think definitely if you look at the Norwegian history and tradition, as you say, I mean, shipping companies and all the actors kind of involved in the maritime industry, they've been extremely adaptable and very global. And so yes, I think so. But I think there are challenges because you have many countries with different institutions and their different interests in this space. So I think there's a lot of work to be done. But I really think that the work that you are doing and that others are doing is very vital in this space. But you also have other things going on, as you say, the technology. And there are so many things going on. You know, what's the best fuel? Is it hydrogen? Is it batteries? Is it ammonia? Is it, you know, whatever's, you know. So when you take a decision now to build a new ship and it's going to last 25 to 30 years, I mean, there's a lot of uncertainties there, right?
So, definitely.
So the financing, I mean, there's a whole ecosystem that kind of needs to change.
And we need not just a country, but the world who's willing and players who are willing to go out a little bit on the risk curve in order to establish what will, for example, the new fuel be. Mm. And at least from a Williamson perspective, we don't know. So we are in many ways agnostic to it as long as it leads to an end goal, which is satisfactory. But we do believe that we have to try a few different areas, whether it's hydrogen, whether it's ammonia, whether it is something else. And along that journey, there will be new technologies, new solutions, where we probably have to maneuver. But personally, going back to the question I asked you, I think the industry will actually be able to meet the goals and the standards that are required upon the industry in 2050. But of course, it will be a tough but interesting ride to get there.
But can I ask you a question concerning when I look at your organization, it kind of makes sense the way that you organize the businesses. But how do you think that the new kind of industries are going to, you could say, enrich your current industries? Do you see these as kind of investment opportunities for the future? Or do you see some sort of synergy or interaction between the new businesses and the traditional businesses?
I think a combination of both. The traditional businesses are important in order to excel some of the new businesses. And the new solutions and new businesses are extremely important to, say, continue to ensure a continued life for the older businesses. So I think this is a symbiosis that we just have to try and make the best out of it. And I don't think most of them can survive one without the other.
With that note, I think we are coming to an end. I think it's a fascinating conversation. And I think that Norway, with the shipping history, the legacy we have, with some of their leading companies in the world, Williamson probably is the leading one, and taking also the lead now in the green transition in various ways, is a fascinating way. So what will the future bring for Williamson? How do you predict the future now?
That's a very hard and big final question, Thomas. But I believe we will continue to shape this industry, and I think we will continue to be a force within it. And I do believe that when we look back in 30 years' time, we will look very, very different than what we look like today.
With that, I have to say thank you, Thomas. Thank you, Randy. I truly enjoyed this conversation and hope you did so. Thank you. See you next time.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
This is a BI production. Listen to more podcasts. Go to bi.no/podcasts.